20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Sunday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you, as always, for being wonderful Packer fans and joining us for another episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We are going to be going over the Packers' biggest weaknesses. Yesterday, we went over the Packers' biggest strengths. Today, we tackle the opposite side of it. It's always, again, fun to look at this year over year. If you want to go back and check out what the biggest weaknesses, or at least what I thought they were a year ago, fun to look at those as well. But today, what we're going to be looking at is what Green Bay needs to do and improve upon if they want to become a real top-tier team, a Super Bowl contender, a better franchise, whatever way that you want to look at it. I have 12 things on my list today that I think are weaknesses that they need to improve upon. And I think it's always, you know, sometimes it's painful. I get that it's more fun looking at the strengths than it is the weaknesses, right? But if you want to keep track of this team and what they need to do to become a legitimate, whether it's a Super Bowl contender, or just like I said, a better franchise, whatever, you want to know and be aware of the weaknesses so you can kind of keep track of those to see if they're either no longer weaknesses or if they're becoming strengths, or if they remain weaknesses, it's going to probably be a problem in some way, shape, or form. So let's get into it right away. Like I said, 12 weaknesses to get into. We're going to start with number one. It's legitimately my remaining biggest concern as to what could potentially hold them back from being a legitimate Super Bowl contender. I think they can be a playoff team. I think they can beat teams in the playoffs. Wouldn't shock me if they could get to a Super Bowl. But if they want to be a legitimate Super Bowl winner, to me, they are going to have to improve to become a more top-tier pass rush team. This is a very nuanced conversation because, as I've talked about on numerous occasions this offseason, I think it still surprises people when I say it, they were tied for eighth in sacks last year. This was a top 10 sack defense in the NFL. In fact, even better than that, again, they were tied for eighth. They were the top quarter of the league. That's pretty remarkable, right? Like, if you thought at all last year, if you would think back at it, would you say that you would have predicted or guessed that the Packers were top eight in sacks last year? Yeah, you wouldn't, right? It did not feel that way throughout the course of the season. Well, there's some reasons for that. First of all, sacks are not all that matters, right? We've talked about it. Pressures are a huge portion and a huge aspect of getting to the quarterback. It's not just getting them to the ground. Getting them to the ground is great. Sacks are phenomenal. If I had the choice between a sack or a pressure, I would choose a sack. Don't get me wrong. But your overall pressure percentage matters as well. Usually when there's pressure, there's chaos, and that stuff is massively important. So while they were tied for eighth in sacks, they were only 16th in pressure percentage per Pro Football Reference. What's interesting about that, though, on the other side, is they had, this also stunned me, per Pro Football Reference, they had the second lowest blitz percentage of any team in the NFL. Second fewest blitzes last year. So they had the eighth most sacks and were still able to be a middle of the road pressure team despite not bringing any additional players on the blitz and being the second fewest blitzes of any team in the NFL last year. That's an interesting sort of, you know, mystery ball of stuff to kind of dig into. I'm going to add another layer to this. This past year, we mentioned they were tied for eighth in sacks, right? They had 45 sacks this past year. And really, like, if they just had a few more, they could have easily gotten into like the top four. Eight sacks against the Tennessee Titans, five against the Dolphins, seven against the Seahawks. Eight of those in the Titans, majority or all were against Will Levis. Five in the Dolphins were against Tua, who the Dolphins did not have a good day that day. Let's just put it that way. Seven against the Seahawks. I think maybe one or two of those was against Geno. I'd have to go back and look. But remember, Sam Howell came in for a good chunk of that game. Green Bay was up in those games and had the opportunity to get after the quarterback a little bit more. That is 20 of their 45 sacks in three games. 20 of 45 in three games. They had 25 sacks in their other 14 games combined. So in three games, they were averaging about seven sacks per game. In their other 14, just, you know, a bit over one, not even two sacks per game, but a sack and a half per game. That's a big difference. So they were a little bit of bad quarterback merchants or bad team merchants against the Dolphins, Seahawks, and Titans when they really got a lot of their sacks throughout the course of the season. Taking it even one step further, going against teams like Minnesota, Detroit, and Philly, three teams that have fantastic offensive lines. I was actually kind of stunned to learn that they had 9 sacks in those three games. I would have guessed that it was probably closer to 4 or 5. They did have 9 sacks, but that's in 6 games against those three teams, averaging exactly 1.5 sacks per game against those teams. And again, the pressure percentage was low as well. So if you look at this, there's statistics all over the place. And you could point to it and say, man, they were eighth overall, top quarter of the league in sacks while bringing the second fewest blitzers this past year. That's a great number to be at. And if you wanted to spin it in that direction, you probably could. You could also look at it and say they were 16th in pressure percentage and 20 of their 45 sacks came in 3 games against, again, some bad offenses in those particular games. So again, it's a nuanced conversation. I think we would all probably agree, even just looking at those numbers in a little bit greater detail and knowing how they played against better teams, this is not a top tier defensive front that is getting pressures on their own. And despite not blitzing a ton, Jeff Hafley was still very unique with how he would bring 4 rushers from different angles and things like that. So he used some smoke and mirrors, despite maybe not bringing extra players, to still get pressures that weren't just getting there with 4. And Brian Gutekunst even talked about it this offseason of how they need to do a better job of getting home with 4 guys. If they can't do that, that is going to limit them as a team. It is few and far between where you have a team that reaches and wins a Super Bowl that can't get home with 4 guys and doesn't have a great pressure group. Now, there's signs for optimism. They do go get a player in the 4th round of Baron Sorrell. They get a 5th round player as a pass rush specialist in Colin Oliver. We'll see if Warren Brinson can do anything on the interior as a 6th round pick. They have guys that are still up and coming. LVN, Carl Brooks, Colby Wooden, even Devontae Wyatt, I would put in that conversation where hopefully there are still signs of growth from those players. Furthermore, and maybe most importantly, they go out and get a new defensive line coach in DeMarcus Covington, which will hopefully be able to unlock those players. You cannot say that Brian Gutekunst is not invested in this position. He has 4 first-round picks that are likely starting along the defensive front in LVN, Rashawn Gary, Devontae Wyatt, and in Kenny Clark. 2 of them on huge contracts in Kenny Clark and Rashawn Gary. And there's still some depth behind those players that they've certainly spent time and resources into developing. This needs to be a better group. I don't know that they need to be top 3. I don't even know that they necessarily need to be top 5. There might even be a world in which you could be 8th again, 8th in sacks, but if they could get up to 8th in pressure percentage, and instead of 3 games where you have 20 sacks in all 3 of those, if it's legitimately more of like 45 sacks split over the entirety more equally, and you're still getting pressures against good teams like Minnesota, Detroit, and Philly, I'm probably okay with it. I think you can still win that way. But if you want to really be an upper echelon team and an upper echelon defense, you probably need to be a top 5 pressure, producing team. And Green Bay's not there right now. And I think they're going to need to take a significant step in order to get there. I don't know that they can get there. And that's why this is a weakness. It's something they're going to need to continue to work on. And right now, in DeMarcus Covington, we trust. And he's going to have to be the one that takes all of this talent, all of the investments that Brian Gutekunst made, and hopefully make them into a unit that is worthy of their draft status and their financial status along that defensive front. Number 2 is not going to be a surprise to anybody. It is dropped. A lot to get into here. The Packers had the highest percentage of receiver error that caused incompletions. This was a statistic that was put out yesterday. Actually 2 days ago, I should say, on Friday. Today, as I'm recording this, I should note that as well. I am recording this on Friday, full transparency there. Warren Sharp put out this statistic. I'll read it one more time. The Packers had the highest percentage of receiver error that caused incompletions of any team. There were 103 wide receivers that qualified for this statistic. The very last player was Jaden Reed, ranked 103 overall. Ranked 102, one spot ahead of them, was Dontavian Wicks. So per Warren Sharp, the 2 receivers who had the highest percentage of receiver error that caused incompletions were Jaden Reed and Dontavian Wicks. That's not great. That's really not good. And it's not going to be a surprise to anybody. Jaden Reed was 3rd last year in most drop passes, tied for 3rd with 10. And Dontayvion Wicks had the highest drop rate percentage of any wide receiver in the NFL. This was a major problem a season ago. Their 6.9% drop rate was second in the NFL as a team. They had the third most drops in the NFL as a team with 33. And Ryan Wood, I'd have to go up and look at the statistic again. Ryan Wood had a statistic up. I've talked about it on the radio show with him as well, where like if just half of those were caught, you take Jordan Love from like mid-tier quarterback to like in that upper echelon in like Patrick Mahomes territory. If just half of those completions were made this past year, if the ones that were clear drops, not even saying Jordan needed to do anything different. If the receivers just do their job on those plays. Here's the thing. Now, I have a lot of faith in Matthew Golden, and I think his hands are actually pretty darn good. And we certainly heard Goody talk about his hands and how great he thinks they can be as well. But Savion Williams had a 10.4% drop rate in college. Matthew Golden had a 9.4% drop rate in college. Remember, the Packers were second worst in the NFL last year with a 6.9% drop rate. And the funny thing is, or the ironic thing is people all the time talk about Christian Watson and his issues with drops. Over the last couple seasons, Christian's actually been very good when it has come to drop passes. He has not dropped many at all. So you are taking away one of the players that actually has been catching the ball when it's coming his way and replacing it with two players that, in at least in college, had major issues with it. Although I will say Matthew Golden did not struggle with it anywhere near as much at Texas this past year. Fingers crossed, hopefully that's the Matthew Golden that Green Bay's getting, and he does not struggle with drops. And hopefully Savion Williams can clean it up, and Jaden Reed can clean it up, Dontayvion Wicks can clean it up, etc. But this was a massive problem a year ago. One thing that I'll point to here that, again, is reason for optimism, it's not a perfect solution. And we have heard, by the way, that Jaden Reed is on the jugs machine, and I'm sure these receivers are working at it nonstop to try to get better at it. But one thing I do think affected this passing offense this past year, and I've talked about it, is not just that Jordan Love wasn't himself because he was hurt, but that those injuries caused him to miss a ton of practice time last year. And when you're not practicing, you're not getting on the same page with your receivers, you're not getting that timing, that rhythm, that consistency that you really need to be an attention to detail offense that's going to be running the crisp routes and that you're on the same timing and all of those things just click naturally. That's tough to do when your quarterback's not practicing. It's great that he's able to get out there for the games. It's great that he's able to go through the walkthroughs. But if you don't get that timing and rhythm down in practice, it's going to hurt you. Add on top of it that Jordan missed some time in training camp because of the contract situation. And there was a lot of opportunity missed to be able to get on the same page with his wide receivers. I don't feel like it ever really came to fruition this past year, that it was ever really quite in rhythm, especially not like it was at the end of 2023. And hopefully, fingers crossed again, that if they are all healthy and all out there at practice, they can all get on the same page, be in a little bit better rhythm, and hopefully we see a better, more consistent effort and result from the Packers receivers in 2025. We'll be right back. Number three is special teams. Signs here and there. The Brandon McManus signing was huge. Definitely the kicking and field goal and extra point game was much better once he got to Green Bay. Sports Illustrated did a huge ranking of special teams. Green Bay was 22nd out of 32 teams. PFF gave their grades for each team on special teams. Green Bay came in dead last, 32nd out of 32 teams. Once again, I'll give you some opportunities for optimism. I do feel like they have some options at kick returner, whether it's Keyshawn Nixon again. I think Savion Williams could do it. I think Marshawn Lloyd could do it. I do think they're going to have some players, Mecole Hardman, that can be very good kick returners in Green Bay. I do think they have an opportunity with Mecole Hardman to have a very good punt returner back there. And Matthew Golden could be another player that I think could be very explosive as a punt returner as well. So in Nixon, potentially from time to time, I think they have some opportunities there. Daniel Whalen, at moments and in minicamp this week, was just crushing punts, not just with distance, but with hang time as well. I think he's a really good punter. I think he needs to get more consistent, but there are signs there. Brandon McManus was really good last year. I love the addition of Isaiah Simmons. I think he can have the ability to be a special teams demon. I think there are other players. We'll see if Christian Welch can make the team, but he has that ability as well. There's certainly some defensive backs and wide receivers, tight ends, etc., that should be able to make out those teams units. They're not skimping on special teams. They care about it when they put the roster together. Rich Bisaccia is what in year 4 now, I think, as special teams coordinator. This should be better. This should be better, which is what we've said for the last 3 decades straight, pretty much every offseason, and it continues to not be better. Hopefully this is the year. I don't know. I've said it a million times before, and I'll say it again. 16th ranked special teams. That's all I'm looking for. Just give me 16th. I don't need you to win games. I just can't have you losing games. Just right smack dab in the middle. Give me 16th. I will sign up for it every single season. I can live with the offense and the defense deciding games. If you can get better than that, I am all for it. But it has to be better, and it has been an issue for far too long. I do think there, again, are positive potential solutions at kick coverage, kick return, punt return, the kicking game, the punting game, all of it. But it has to come together and be better than what it's been for far, far, far too long now. Number 4 is cornerback depth. So again, I'm recording this on Friday. Maybe you are living in a future in which Jaire Alexander is known to be back, which would solve a lot of the concerns at that spot. If Jaire is back, Jaire is the, you know, pseudo number 1. Keyshawn Nixon, Nate Hobbs, Carrington Valentine, Javon Bullard kicking down. I'm good. We're good. You know, you can, you know, fight it out with Kalen King and Michael Robinson and Kamal Haddon and those guys for the 5th and 6th spots, and that's probably fine. Special teams will probably win the day there with who gets that spot and who has the opportunity to play or at least be active on game day. But I'm totally cool with that. I think that's a more than good enough group. You have 5 guys, including Bullard, that you trust. And then, you know, kind of some guys that are going to be more helping on special teams. You're in a very good spot. If Jaire is not there and you do not add anything additional, which I don't know what you would add. There's nothing on the free agent market. You are now looking at having Valentine, Hobbs, and Nixon, with also Bullard being able to kick down in the slot, and then just praying and hoping, right, that either A, you don't get any injuries, or that somebody steps up in some way or some form. I don't know who you're trusting in that situation. I don't think you want Kalen King or Kamal Haddon or Micah Robinson playing any sort of full-time snaps, although we did hear from Derek Ansley that he's very optimistic about Kalen King, which is a great sign. Kamal Haddon's a very fun player. I'm very intrigued by him. And Micah Robinson had a great pass breakup in the 2-minute drill. And as a 7th-round pick, there's some great speed there, and I'm excited to see what he can bring to the table. But it is certainly living in the realm of unknown. It's not exactly where you want to be in the defensive backfield. So I do definitely have some concerns and trepidation at corner if Jaire's not back and if you don't address it in some other way. Now, they have found ways to fill that in the past, finding guys like Rasul Douglas off of a practice squad, Keyshawn Nixon out of nowhere. So maybe they find another player that can come in and help them. But if there is no Jaire, I would legitimately have some concerns about that cornerback depth. Number 5 is star players. I do believe that if you want to take a step and be a true championship contender, you have to have, in an ideal world, a few big-time star players, probably like 3, 4, 5 guys that are at the top of their positions, top of their game, and can kind of lead you to the promised land. And we've seen that in both 96 and in 2010. I don't need to go through the players. You guys know the players. But you need some big-time performances from some big-time players to kind of get you over that hump. I talked about it yesterday. I do think you can get there with just really good players everywhere and with good depth everywhere and not having any weaknesses. And maybe Green Bay could win that way. But man, I would also love it if a few of these players stepped up to become star players. They have 2, Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney. There are others that you could potentially make some arguments for. At least you could see the vision for it, right? If Jaire Alexander is back and he plays at the peak of his level, he is more than capable of being a star in this league. Jordan Love, at the end of 2023, over the last, 9 games of the season, looks like a top 3 quarterback in the league. He has the ability to go at least through stretches of being a star. Now the question is, can he do it consistently? Edgerrin Cooper is going to be in that conversation this year if he continues to progress the way that he did a year ago. Elgton Jenkins and Zach Tom, you can make arguments for along the offensive line, legitimately. Like, they are 2 very good offensive linemen. I don't know if they're quote-unquote stars, but they're awesome, and those are 2 guys that you love having along the offensive line. So there are options there. There are players who could step up into those roles. Maybe, I don't expect Matthew Golden to be there his rookie year, but there are other players that are young and talented and maybe could step into that as well. But those are some of them. But for now, as we're recording this today, I would say Xavier McKinney and Josh Jacobs are really your true stars on this team. And if you want to be a upper echelon team, you probably need a little bit more than that. So it's going to be paramount that they have a few of these guys step up to another level to become those stars and generate a few more possibilities for some of those, you know, just star performances on a week-to-week basis all throughout the course of this season. Number six was one that we talked about as a strength yesterday, but is also a weakness, and that is the youth of this team. As I talked about yesterday, there is a lot of positives that come with that. This is a team that should be still ascending almost everywhere. They are young, they're talented, and it's not like youth that's like they've never had. I don't know if you guys heard that. That was a heck of a thunder in the background there. It's not like they have no experience. This is a team that, while young, has had two playoff runs the last 2 years, right? So they've had some big playoff games. They've had some moments. They've had some heartache and heartbreak. They've gone through it. They've gone through some adversity. Now, can they learn from that? That's the question. But I think with a young team, you sometimes can lack the confidence or the killer instinct in some of those big games. And we saw that a year ago. We saw in pretty much every single big game, they were not able to step up and be the team that could come up with the win in the clutch. Now, they showed signs of it in 2023, and they were darn close in a couple of those games in 2024, but just couldn't get over the hump. There's some youth there. There's some inexperience there. And now it's time to grow, mature, and be the best versions of themselves and of this team. And if they can take that step, that is no longer a weakness. And the youth overall can still be a strength because these are young, talented players in the prime of their careers, less likely to get injured than older players. That there's a lot of positives there. But with that youth, sometimes a little bit inexperienced, a little bit less of that killer instinct, and that can certainly hurt. And I do think at times that has shown up as a weakness, specifically in 2024. Number seven, I've talked about quite a bit, and that's just Kenny Clark insurance. I don't know what you do now if Kenny Clark goes down for any period of time. And maybe they just change the defense and say, screw it, we're not concerned about, you know, big run stuffing defensive tackles, and we're just going to, you know, shoot into the backfield and hope for the best. That sounds good until you get into a 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1, a tush push situation, a goal line situation. You're going to need some run stuffers along that line. And even with Kenny Clark, I still have some concerns as to whether or not they have enough. Now, they draft Warren Brinson in the 6th round. It's a lot of pressure to have him be like your second best run stopping defensive tackle. And it's even more pressure if Kenny goes down for any period of time and Brinson's now your one. You might point to Nasir Stackhouse and say, hey, they went out and they got this big guy. Nasir Stackhouse is more in the form of like Jonathan Ford, who they took in the 7th round. It's great that he's big. Big does not in and of itself equal success. It does not necessarily mean that you are stopping the run. In fact, Jonathan Ford in college, his team did not even use him in obvious rundowns because he played with such poor pad level and get moved off the ball so easily that it didn't matter that he was big. It mattered that he kept getting knocked off the ball and didn't play with consistent technique, which has obviously hampered him from getting a full-time job on the field in the NFL as well. Size is great. You have to be able to know how to use that size. I don't know that I can say with Nasir Stackhouse that he's ready to come in and be a big-time run stuffer. I don't know that I can say that with Brinson either. And I definitely know that Kenny Clark can, but that is about it. Devontae Wyatt's not that guy. Colby Wooden's not that guy. Carl Brooks is not that guy. There's no defensive end that you can move inside. And you have some, even though, you know, Edgerrin Cooper's put on some functional strength, you know, even though you've done that, you know, you still don't have like the biggest linebackers in the world either. It's just a really interesting position. There's nobody really out there. If he goes down, you're probably going to have to make a trade. And I just have some real concern about Kenny if he goes down. We've been saying this for years now, and thankfully he's been very, you know, resilient, and he's been able to play through some stuff, and he's just been somebody that you can count on. But man, I would love a little bit more insurance there, and Green Bay just does not have it at the moment. Number eight, I'm going to use one of Goody's phrases against him here in a moment. And that word is urgency. I guess it's not a phrase, it's a word, but urgency. Now, you can't say that Goody does not have any level of urgency or anything like that. I thought 2021, 2022, he pretty much did everything he could, specifically with some cap strap stuff due to the COVID stuff, that he went about as all in as he possibly could during that time frame. He went out and signed Xavier McKinney and Josh Jacobs. Anytime he's had money to spend, he's gone out and spent it. Went out and got Nate Hobbs and Aaron Banks this offseason. He's not afraid to go out and spend big, all right? He has a level of urgency to him. He will go out and spend. He'll borrow from the future. He'll do all of those things. But what I think Green Bay needs to do a little bit better job of is understanding their windows better and going for it when those windows are open. And again, this probably goes back to Ted a little bit more than it does with Brian. I think, again, for the most part, Brian has shown this. And over the last couple of years, he probably shouldn't have, you know, moved to that level yet of being like, now is the time. But I do want to see Green Bay find those moments a bit more to say, our window's open right now, and we need to, you know, we need to do it right now. If we're going to make a run at this thing, we are going to go all in. We're going to use our draft picks to trade for players if we need to. Whatever that thing is that has left them from going fully to that level of saying, hey, I know this is going to cost us a little bit in the future, but now is the time to make this kind of move. I love the idea of being competitive every year, and you have that puncher's chance in the playoffs. I even think it's a little bit different now with 14 teams instead of 12 teams in the playoffs. And, you know, there's just so many talented teams. And now you're getting about every single year, you know, five or six teams that are going all in and doing everything that they can to open their individual window. If you're not matching that, it is so hard to get to that level. There's going to be a team that just has done it better than you and has more talent, and that's ultimately going to win out far more often than not. So I think Green Bay as a whole, as a franchise, needs to do a better job of understanding when their window is open, when they need to make that run towards a championship, and then having that urgency when that happens. It's not there yet. I'm cool with it not being. I know we talked about 2025 for a while, and I think they've kind of, again, with Josh Jacobs, Xavier McKinney, Aaron Banks, Nate Hobbs, I think they've done it to some extent while also giving themselves some options moving forward, and we'll see what they can kind of do in the future. But I just think they need to be a little bit more cognizant of that. And they haven't had this 1A perfect scenario in a while now. And I when they did, it was 2020, and they could have done a better job, quite frankly, of opening it wider in 2020 when they were there. And they did not do that. So that is something that still needs to be done, they need to do a much better job of, I should say. We'll be right back. Number 9 is loyalty. I talked about patience and culture yesterday as strengths. Sometimes loyalty has been a bit of a weakness for Green Bay. I think ultimately the idea of bringing Rich Bisaccia back this year was the right one. I think he makes a great assistant coach. We'll see if he can improve as a special teams coordinator this year. He was cognizant of it. Giving him the extension and probably a bit more money is a little bit more on the, like, are we sure about that side of things? But this is a team that has waited, I think, too long. Joe Barry, at least a year too long, right? In order to move on in a different direction. And whether it's with players at times, or whether it, you know, Eric Stokes, Josh Myers. I mean, Eric Stokes went into the season last year as the unquestioned starter at corner. Why was that just given to him? Carrington Valentine was barely even rotating in with Eric Stokes to start last year. Why? Because he was a first round pick? Because he'd been there longer? I don't understand it. Josh Myers for 4 years was just handed the center spot with no competition whatsoever. Why? Their loyalty at times gets them into trouble. And I'm not saying that in the last 4 years that they needed to cut Josh Myers or cut Eric Stokes or anything like that. But competition is what's going to maybe get a little bit more out of those players. And Green Bay talks about competition all the time, but you have to sometimes practice what you preach. With Stokes, at least we saw it at the end of the year. With Myers, we never saw it. And it seems like sometimes they stay far more loyal to players, coaches, front office, whatever it might be, a little bit longer than they should when they need to move on. I will say this. You can very much put a piece of this in the side of a strength as well. There is a aspect of them staying true to form, keeping with their identity, and staying loyal to people at times has helped them out. And other times it's been a little bit more of an issue. They have had times too. They knew where it was time to move on, like Amari Rodgers. I mean, they cut him pretty quick, off of his second year that year, right? That they let him go. They did that pretty quick as a, you know, early third round pick. But at times, I think they're a bit too loyal, and I think they just need to kind of look at it and say, is this the right way to be doing things? And is there maybe a situation or two where we need to be a little bit more cutthroat and going in a different direction and just trying to look at every little avenue to upgrade the team? I think that's a very Philadelphia Eagles thing. Is, hey, we're gonna upgrade everywhere at all times whenever we have the chance. And I know Goody will say it's a 365-day-a-year process, but I think sometimes there's complacency is 1,000,000% the wrong word. There's not complacency. Everyone in that organization I know very well wants to win Super Bowls and do everything in their power to win. But I just think it's a little bit too much loyalty of like, let's give him one more chance. Let's see if he can do it this time. I think they need to be a little bit more cutthroat when it comes to that stuff. Not a lot. Not change their philosophy in its entirety, but just be a little bit more willing to move on in some of those situations. Number 10 is overemphasizing versatility. There's another one is a juxtaposition to yesterday. We talked about the versatility as being a huge strength of this team. And in general, I love the philosophy. I do really much believe that, you know, in order to get a team through a season, you're going to have some guys that are able to play some different spots. But I do think there is a time and place for that and to kind of build like the core of your team. But it is okay to have specialists too. It is okay to have a player that is just like, hey, this player might not be able to play the slot and the outside, but you know what? They're a damn good outside corner. Or this player might not be able to play the post safety and the box safety, but man, they are one of the best post safeties in the NFL or the best box safeties in the NFL. Maybe this guy can't play four spots along the defensive line or five spots along the offensive line or whatever the case may be, but you know what? They're a heck of a right guard. And that's what we're going to bring him in for. And we saw that with Aaron Banks this year. Aaron Banks is pretty much a left guard, right guard guy only. He's not a center. He's not a tackle. And they were willing to do that. But I think sometimes they need to have a little bit more ability to say, hey, we just need a really good version of this, whatever that thing is. Doesn't necessarily have to be this, 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 and this that he can do. We just need a really good end or a really good run stuffer or a really good pass rush specialist or whatever that might be. And then go and get that player and fill that spot rather than a player who might be able to do a little bit of this and also might be a little of that and might be a little of this. That's good and well for a good chunk of your roster. But at times you need to fit that square peg into the square hole or whatever, you know what I mean? And you need to be able to have somebody that can get done exactly what you need them to get done. And I think sometimes that emphasis on versatility can go a bit too far and you just need to specialize some things from time to time. Number 11, we can go over pretty quick, first round drafting and just kind of some of those early round draft picks. On the whole, they have a lot of draft picks year over year and they are more volume drafters. Hey, we're going to make 14 selections. If 11 of them bust, but we still get three really good players out of it, we have done our job. I don't care if it's a sixth rounder, a seventh rounder, and a fourth rounder. If we got three really great players out of it, we're good with it. But when you look at a run of Eric Stokes, Devontae Wyatt, Quay Walker, LVN, and Jordan Morgan, as we sit here today, it's not good enough. Stokes is gone. Devontae Wyatt has been fine, not bad, but certainly not as lived up to expectations. Quay Walker, trending good, maybe. Maybe he can get to that point, but it hasn't been consistent enough, certainly so far. LVN has not lived up to it. Jordan Morgan, we can give a pass to because it was 1 year and he had the injury issues, obviously. But on the whole, in its totality, that group of first-round picks since Eric Stokes has just not been good enough. Needs to be better, and if you want to be a top-tier team, and if you're wondering why maybe Green Bay hasn't made that jump from good team to great team, Eric Stokes, Devontae Wyatt, Quay Walker, LVN, Jordan Morgan, your ROI just hasn't been good enough with that group of players so far. Last but not least is third down efficiency. I don't know if you guys know this. Green Bay was atrocious on third downs last year. 39.6% on offense on third down conversions. And Jordan Love only completed 52.7% of his passes on third downs. Very uncharacteristic of a Matt LaFleur offense. And that's where some of that attention to detail stuff can really come out. And we've talked about too, not on today's show, but in the past, we're like, that Packers offensive line sometimes got a little bit beat up in more obvious passing downs. Those things all come to play when you're at third and eight and a half to have it moment. Defenses are really good at it. They're good at knowing when you're going to pass, that it's more predictable, and you've got to find a way to protect, and you've got to find a way to get open down the field. And Green Bay did not do a good enough job of that this past year, and their third down efficiency was awful. You cannot live in that realm. You cannot live anywhere near 39.6%. I guarantee that's going to be a massive emphasis for Matt LaFleur this offseason in training camp, and they're going to get better at it, but it has to, or they're just dead on arrival when it comes to being a competitor in 2025. You cannot reach the pinnacle with a 39.6% third down conversion rate. Just impossible to do. So they're going to have to be much, much better at it. To recap, the 12 weaknesses that Green Bay needs to find ways to improve in some way: the lack of a top-tier pass rush, the drop issues, special teams in its totality, cornerback depth, star players, needing more of them, needing guys to step up, the youth and inexperience and just kind of coming up big in big games, some Kenny Clark insurance. I don't know if there's anything you can do at this point, but it's just, again, something that is a weakness right now. Their urgency in identifying the window and when the window's open and when you need to kind of go all in and go for it. Loyalty, or probably too much of it. overemphasizing versatility, first round drafting or high end drafting, and then third round efficiency or third down efficiency, I should say. Those are the weaknesses. Hopefully they can be mitigated and or become strengths this upcoming year. And if they are, that would go a long way in making Green Bay contenders in 2025. That's going to do it for me today. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Huang, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Jake Kohner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkelstinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Matt Geiger, and Pack Attack Cast. I'll see you guys soon, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.